When life hits you in the gut, it's always a sucker punch. You never see it coming. One moment, you're walking along, worrying your little worries and making quiet plans, and the next, you're rolled into a ball trying to hug yourself against the pain, frantic and reeling, your mind a jumble of scared thoughts. A Christmas wreath hung on our door. I paused with my hand above the lock's keypad. That's right. Today was Christmas. This morning, I was at a mountain lodge playing in the snow with the most dangerous man in Houston. Then, Rogan's surveillance expert texted him, and now here I stood, 6 hours later, my hair a mess, my clothes rumpled from being under a heavy jacket, in front of the warehouse that served as my family's home. I would have to go inside and break the ugly news, and nobody would like what was going to happen next. With everything that had happened, we had agreed not to exchange gifts this year. Not only had I missed Christmas Eve, but I was about to deliver one hell of a terrible present. The main thing was not to panic. If I panicked, then my sister and my cousins would panic too, and my mother would do her best to talk me out of the only logical solution to our crisis. I'd managed to keep a lid on my emotions all the way from the lodge to the airport, during the flight on the private jet, and through the helicopter ride from the plane to the landing pad 4 blocks away. But now, all my fears and stress were boiling over. I took a deep breath. Around me, the street was busy. Not as busy as it had been a few days ago when I was helping Cornelius Harrison, an animal mage and now an employee of the Baylor Investigative Agency, find out who murdered his wife, Nari, but still busy. Rogan's views on security were rather draconian. He was in love with me and had decided that my home wasn't assault proof, and so he'd bought 2 square miles of industrial real estate around our warehouse and turned it into his own private military base. Everyone wore civilian clothes, but they weren't fooling anyone. Rogan's people had all gone through armed forces in one way or another, and they didn't wander or stroll. They moved from point A to point B with a definite goal in mind. They kept their clothes clean, their hair short, and they called Rogan Major. When we made love, I called him Connor. A dry popping sound came from the street. The memory of snapping David Howling's neck gripped me. I heard the crunch his bones made as I twisted his head to the side. In my mind, I saw him fall as I let go, and panic drowned me. I let it wash over me and waited for it to recede. Finding Nari's killer had been an ugly and brutal mess, and at the end, I watched Olivia Charles, the woman who had murdered her, be eaten alive by a swarm of rats as Cornelius sang, mourning his wife. I relived her death in my dreams almost every night. I didn't want to walk back into the world. I just wanted a little bit more time. I made myself look in the direction of the sound. An ex-soldier was coming my way, in his 40s, with a scarred face, leading an enormous Kodiak bear on a very thin leash. The bear wore a harness that read, Sergeant Teddy. The ex-soldier stretched his left arm and twisted, as if trying to slide the bones back in place. Another dry crunch, sending a fresh jolt of alarm through me. Probably an old injury. The bear stopped and looked at me.
Be polite, the soldier told him. Don't worry, he just wants to say hi.
I don't mind. I stepped closer to the bear. The massive beast leaned over to me and smelled my hair. Can I pet him? The soldier looked at Sergeant Teddy. The bear made a low, short noise.
He says you can.
I reached over and carefully petted the big, shaggy neck. What's his story?
Someone thought it would be a good idea to make very smart magic bears and use them in combat, the ex-soldier said. Problem is, once you make someone smart, they become self-aware and call you on your book.